Hey, everybody, welcome to the Afterword. And today's Afterword is a little bittersweet. It's the last time that Steve Clifford, who was our lead pastor for almost 20 years here at Westgate Church, the guy who 10 years ago this week, actually, after months of meeting, just hired me. He's not just a mentor, but just a dear, well, I don't know, is there a stronger word than mentor? Yeah, I think just mentor and friend, and he's just a towering figure in my life. Well, it's his last week on staff at Westgate. He's going to be transitioning to a new role. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And so this is kind of the last time I get to talk to Steve as a member of our staff. Now, he'll still be around, and he'll still come back. He'll still preach. So we'll still have some afterwards with Steve. But this is the last time he's going to be on our staff. And this was his last weekend and the last sermon. And so I get to talk to him about the Garden of Gethsemane and kind of the moments leading up to Jesus' death and crucifixion. And then eventually on Easter, we're going to talk about his resurrection. So it's a little bittersweet, but it's a really fun conversation. Steve shares with us a little bit about some insights from this moment, this powerful moment in Jesus' life where he we get an insight into his relationship with God that is incredible. And we get some insight into maybe how we can approach what happens when life gets really tough. So I'm so excited for this convo. Steve Clifford's here. And so with that, let's just dive right in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Afterword. And welcome our special guest, Steve Clifford. Steve, you're here.
Hello, hello, hello.
Man, so this is kind of bittersweet because this is kind of not a finale, but maybe kind of an end to a run here for in a way that you're transitioning off Westgate staff, and that's weird.
Yeah, it's been weird for me as well, and I know the staff has kind of walked me through it, and I know we've. They probably are saying, how many times are we going to say goodbye to this dude? You know? But yeah, it really, it's been an honor to be able to do it this way and to be able to hang around and be a resource for Jay and the staff and the elders, and then to preach some as well. And Jay has told me he's, you know, I'll come back.
Yeah, you'll be back.
But now I'm going to go into this role, this new role called the Emeritus role. Pastor Emeritus.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pastor Emeritus, which sounds very fancy.
It's, you know, it's a Latin word for old fart. No, it actually is. It comes, the meaning of it, I had to look it up, which tells you how much thought I've really given this thing in the past. But it's kind of an allowance to keep a title as an act of honor.
Oh, well, and yeah. So, well, I think about Professor Emeritus's. It's not just right. That they were awesome. It's that they continue to exert some sort of leadership over the department, even now as they're, you know, kind of not maybe actively in the same role. So there's also not just an honorific thing, but also an influence and a relational capital. So it's kind of, like Gandalf, I suppose.
Wait a minute. No, you know, I really, I have to say, and every chance I get, I want to say that the elders and Jay in particular, at every opportunity, he has honored Dana and I. And really, it's embarrassing, really. Way too much credit for things that have gone really well. There's been a team of people around me and some men and women who have saved me from some horrible decisions and really contributed to the directions of Westgate. And so I am just so grateful for Jay on the first hand for his honor that he's extended to Dana and I, but I'm also grateful that out of our friendship and out of our relationship, he was able to step in and take over for me. And I just have a lot of confidence in what God's going to do in the future at Westgate. through his leadership and you and others on the team that it's such a refreshing aspect to my soul that I can leave without the anxiety of, okay, it's, you know, something that you've poured your life into for over 20 years is not going to be misused. It's a community that's going to be protected and well cared for. And I'm super, super, super grateful for the elders and their extension to Dana and I, and for Jay and the honor he's extended, and the gift that he exercises now that the rest of the Westgate community will get to enjoy for hopefully decades to come.
You know, I was going to ask you this, and we'll get into the sermon this weekend. But before we do, I want to ask you, I was thinking, like, what have you learned, or what are you learning right now in this season? Because that's got to be kind of a difficult transition. But like, what are you learning in this season of life as you transition to this new pastor emeritus role? Like, what are some things that you are like clear things that are popping out as things that God's teaching you?
Well, I think I'm learning that I was not as far along as I thought. It was harder for me to let go of things. I think I'm learning that I'm not as humble as I thought, that small changes have affected me, you know, proportionately more than they should have. I think I'm learning that I have a certain amount of fear about what's next. And when people ask me, what do I do when I meet people for the first time, it's hard for me to describe to them what I do, because I don't really know yet what the next chapter looks like. I have a lot of confidence in what the chapter will bring in terms of fulfillment and joy for Dana and I, but I don't have a whole lot of definition around it. And I think that stepping away from Westgate a little bit more is actually going to be needed for me. It's actually a process that Dana and I really do need, because there's got to be a separation from something before you can move into something new,
right?
And discover something new. And by us hanging around as long as we have, which has been a real blessing, don't misunderstand, it's been a gigantic blessing, but it's also delayed the process of change into the next season. And so I was surprised how much fear I had about it, and how used I was to the way things were in the communities that were around me, and the support systems that I had. And I'm learning afresh that Jesus is not done, and as he gave me a promise for the community at Westgate, I think he's going to give me another promise for this third adventure that Dana and I go into, with opportunities to lead and to teach and to coach. I just don't know what those really look like yet. I mean, I'm already doing some of it, so I'm not completely in the dark. I've got about already over 10 pastors that I'm coaching.
Wow, that's so cool.
Been working with, and because of the generosity of Westgate, I do it all for free. So I'm really thrilled about doing that, and look forward to seeing what's next.
So I know that there's probably quite a few people listening who are in not an identical, but a similar situation. Something's been pulled out from under them. There's an uncertain future, or something is frightening in the future that they don't have certainty about. That's almost everybody. What has helped? Like, is there a discipline? Is there a thing that has helped you recenter? Like, I'm just trying to get a peek underneath the hood of, like, when those times come, like, what's helped you?
Well, I think actually you may not, you know, have 20 years at a church, but you're going to grow old.
Yeah.
If the Lord allows you to live, there's no alternative. The only alternative to aging is to be called home prematurely to Jesus. So each person, you know, all of us, Dad, will go into a process where we'll see a diminishing capacity of the energy that we have and the effects of age. I still feel really great, but I don't feel as young as I did 20 years ago. And so all of us will go into this kind of process. And what I'm leaning into is just an assurance. I don't know how to really say this. It's a really great question, Dad, so thank you for it. But It's this assurance that I have that God has been so gracious to me and so faithful to not leave me and give up on me and to use me in spite of myself, that I just feel like why would he leave me now? You know, is it just pastors that get that? And I know, of course, the answer is absolutely not. There's a new season, and there'll be a depth to it. There'll hopefully be a wisdom that comes out of it. I look forward to becoming on the other, getting a little bit farther down the road and having a better picture of what has happened. But I'm leaning into the same disciplines I've leaned into all my life. I start my day in the scriptures. I start my day with an introspection of what's going on and a reflection about what's coming ahead. I remind myself in my journal about what's most important, and like this passage, what I really want. I do that without as much hurry as I used to have, because my schedule is much more my own,
right?
Which is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Most of the world never dreams of being able to experience this kind of third adventure or third season in life. They just work their fingers completely to the bone until they get too old where they can't work, and then they usually die pretty quick after that. For me to think, you know what, I've got, by God's grace, if he allows me to and tarries until he comes again, I've got another 10 or 20 years to invest in people. And if so, that would be, can you imagine how cool that would be?
Yeah.
Who I might meet and what I might get to do.
A relentless, that's always been one of your superpowers, I think, is a relentless optimism that God's with us and better days are ahead, or good days are ahead, not better, but good days are ahead. I think that's an uncommon. Do you ever think of yourself as someone who professes or has the spiritual gift of faith, which is kind of almost like a supernatural ability to see God's goodness and trust in it?
Yeah, one of my best friends in life is Tom Randall, and I've always thought that he was my model for someone who exhibited the gift of faith. And maybe he's rubbed off on me some.
Huh.
I just have a track record. If the past is the best indicator for what the future will hold, then God's past with me has been faithfulness and goodness and kindness. Not easiness, don't misunderstand. There's been plenty of tears and lots of heartbreak, but there's also been this assurance of his presence in my life. And I can't wait to see what he's going to do next. I am an optimist.
Yeah.
I think that faith in Jesus brings that out in me, and I am optimistic, probably to a fault.
Well, it's also hard to be a leader of a thing if you're not optimistic. I mean, we've all been around people who are like a little more Eeyore, you know, the sun, it's going to be terrible. And that doesn't generate people. People don't follow that. It's just not, it's also probably not true, you know? So that's not great. One of the things that I wanted to get into, it's actually kind of dovetails because we're talking a little bit about fear. And one of the things that we're talking about is the Garden of Gethsemane. And in that story, Jesus is facing something that is fearful. Now, I'm not trying to equate anything that we've gone through to what he's gone through, but I am
Certainly.
Saying that there's an analogousness to this. And it's so much so that he kind of sweats blood. So I think that there is a sense in which there is Jesus is facing an uncertainty in this, or actually, it's just a difficult reality going forward. When you reflect on this passage in the Garden of Gethsemane, what should we see as something Jesus gives to us, and what is something that only Jesus is going through? Like, what's the human aspect of it that we can share, or that's similar, that we can learn from Jesus, and what's uniquely Jesus and messianic?
Well, I do think... I love that we have access to this part of Jesus' life.
It's crazy, isn't it? It really is nuts.
It shows us so much more to him than somebody who could really teach in an effective way and then, you know, do miracles and draw large crowds of people. For him to experience some of this grief and some of this conflictedness about what he wants versus what the Father wants. I think it's quite an amazing picture of Jesus. That without it, I think we would be the poorer for it.
Yeah, I think if it weren't there, I think it would be easy to present Jesus as some sort of superhuman that didn't feel the emotions that you and I might imagine ourselves feeling upon the threat of not just death, but cruel, yeah, tortured death.
Yeah, so I think that all of the emotion, all of what seems to be intense sorrow, the doubt that comes out, the conflictedness with what he knows to be the path he needs to walk and the path that he desires. All of those things I think are common with us. He of course has some insight into things that we do not have as readily available to us. I think he has more of the eternity perspective that we have a little bit of, because the scriptures have explained some of that stuff to us since this time. But I think I'm just really grateful for the human aspect of the struggle. I just think there's a dangerous thing that's prevalent among us, and that is, if you're in the will of God and you're obedient in everything, that everything will go great.
That's the lie.
Lie.
That if we're obedient and good Christians and we follow God, that nothing bad is really going to happen to us.
Yeah, and then of course the reverse is true, which is basically a Christian karma philosophy, which if it doesn't go good, then I must have done something wrong.
Right. And I think a lot of people go there.
A lot of times I bring it on myself, right?
If you don't change your oil, your car probably will break down, right? Yeah, I get it. But that's not what people get upset about. They get upset. I think people fall into despair when they feel like God is disappointed or has turned their face from them. That's when hopelessness comes in. I'm not good enough. I'm bad. God doesn't love me as much as other people. I've messed up too much to really receive the closeness or intimacy that other people seem to have. That's, I think, when people despair. So I think you're right on that.
And I think this, one of the great gifts of this passage is it tells us it's okay to despair.
Well, yes, he does. Right? And he does ask.
There are some things that are hard. There are sorrow to the point of death.
Yeah.
You know, and then you just, I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that kind of sorrow, and not to his intensity possibly, but certainly to where I thought the only thing that was really a viable option was to quit.
Yeah.
And we see that God does not turn his back on us when we feel those kinds of things. And he is so gracious in the midst of this. And Jesus himself can identify with us,
yeah,
when we have those kind of hard times, which is what part of the message of the book of Hebrews is that we have a faithful high priest that has experienced the kinds of heartache that we do, and yet without sin.
It strikes me, tell me what you think about this, because as I was reading this, and I want to get into this, one of the things I thought about was that Jesus actually models, there's kind of like three prayers, I guess you could say, three moments where he prays that Matthew gives us. And Matthew is super Jewish. He's a Jewish scholar. And it reminded me that he kind of structured this like a psalm of lament. It starts with like ruthless honesty. Then it goes into true emotion. And then it pivots to hope in God. And I think that Jesus is almost modeling through his prayer journey the kind of the way that lament really truly works. First, you got to face the reality. And he faces it dead on. I mean, he's sweating blood. Then there's the emotion, like, I do not want this to happen, right? He says, if it's possible, can this cup be taken from me? And yet then it pivots. Then it pivots in the last time Jesus prays, he doesn't say, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me. He ends it with, may your will be done, right? And so there is a switch or transition or place that Jesus gets to. And I think that, do you think that that could be helpful to folks going through grief and suffering and like this kind of sorrow?
Well, there's the added element and of also in complete a complete lack of support to the people he leaned on.
Yeah. You're saying the disciples.
He brought Peter, James, and John up there with him because we don't see anywhere in the Gospels Jesus struggling like this.
Right.
We see him kind of doing it, but this is the most intense suffering and struggle that we see before the cross. And I think he knew I need community, man, and I need community around me. And that community completely let him down.
But it's so fascinating to me that the Son of Man, the Messiah, needed Peter, James, and John. Doesn't that strike you as like, it shouldn't strike me as insane, but it strikes me as insane that Jesus would like need that in his humanity, you know?
Yeah, and then who are we to think we don't?
Right. Well, I think that might be that might be a big lesson.
Yeah, big lesson there is that if you find yourself isolated, even Jesus didn't, try to do what he could to make sure in his toughest moments that he had the people he trusted the most around him.
Talk to me a little bit about this. When you read this passage, there's parts that like map onto human experience, but then there's also this part that seems like really different, right? There are many people who have marched through their death with confidence. A lot of Christian martyrs have died, quote, mm-hmm. better than Jesus died. That he's sweating blood. It does seem like something different than the threat of mere physical death or even Roman torture is going on here, right? Do you read the passage that way?
Yeah, I think that he's anticipating separation from the Father for a slight moment while the sins of the world are placed on him. He's never had that for eternity. He's been in perfect fellowship with the rest of the Trinity. And he's going into something that's going to be so alone, plus the intensity of the spiritual forces of darkness blasting on him, the weight of the sin of mankind that he's anticipating taking on. The scale of this is just so gigantic that it's almost a miracle that he doesn't die in his preparation for the cross.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to die, but it's a total other thing to know exactly how much it'll hurt and still face it.
Yeah. And not just the physical pain, right? It's a little bit of a mystery because it's like, I think about all the sins of everyone in the state of California for their entire lives. And that just seems like a gigantic, like, furnace, right? And then you think of the United States, everyone in the U.S., and then I think the entire world, and then I think of all of human history. Like, this, it starts to, your mind starts to, it's like contemplating the number of galaxies or stars. You know, your mind starts to quit, you know?
I don't know that there's much value in it other than thankfulness.
Right.
While Jesus did that for us, that should allow us. And, you know, for those of us who sometimes get, because of our familiarity with what Jesus has done for us, we get a little casual about what Jesus did for us. This passage wakes us up and says, wow, the death of God's Son was a costly, painful, sorrowful, gigantically intense event.
Yeah. You kind of ended with the life that we want, the life you really want, what you really want most. That's something you've done in our leadership cohorts that we do. It's something I feel like you've done at staff levels for a while. It's just kind of been a thing that you've done. Talk a little bit about that and what you're trying to get people to understand and get through.
Well, I think that Hebrews 12, which I referred to in the sermon, Hebrews 12 gives us the insight that it was not his relationship with the Father that gave him the stamina he needed to endure the cross. It was what he really wanted and what was before him that allowed him to endure the cross. And he certainly didn't want to die on the cross, but he did want to be obedient to the Father. And that joy that was in front of him allowed him to endure what was most difficult aspect of his earthly ministry. I just think it's revolutionized my life. I think I spend so much time being distracted by things that every commercial I see, every ad that I notice is always trying to tell me what I really want.
Huh.
And they're trying to tell me
what you really want. You what need, you really need you is need this new thing.
You need
right?
this. Yeah, and yeah. if you get this, then you can
then you'll be
somebody.
Happy. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You'll be. And, I fell trapped to it.
Sure.
I found it at a time in my life about 8 or 10 years ago where I found myself in my casual moments, certainly not in my prayers in front of people because I'm too sophisticated for that. But in my casual moments, it was really just an exercise of coveting. And I wanted nicer cars. I wanted bigger homes. I wanted, you know, I wanted all kinds of different things. And I just, when it, I was challenged, as I mentioned in the story, that God said, that's such little things. What do you really want? What do you really, really want? What are the kinds of things you hope said about you when you're gone? And so I started an exercise where I started to really pay attention to what is it that I really want? And it was amazing how what kind of car I drive or how big my house is or what my 401k has or what people think of me. It was amazing how quickly those things kind of got brushed aside. Those are still important to me. I like those things and I want some of those things, but they're not priorities anymore.
They kind of melt away in significance.
They melt away when you start to say, what is it that I really want? I mean, I really want, if God were to give me these things, you know, I would say, wow, that's a life. I've had the privilege of doing tons and tons of memorial services for people. And the ones who have lived life well are always such an encouragement. You realize, wow, they didn't do everything right and they wasted some time. And of course, but man, the overall trajectory of their life was they invested in people. They loved those who were really important to them. And they didn't get tangled up in stuff. And, I want to live that kind of life. I want to live the kind of life where my grandchildren and even some, maybe a few people at Westgate would say, yeah, he led us well. He was true to what he said. It was important to him. He was not a hypocrite.
So the passage you're relating to is for the joy set before him, Christ endured the cross. And you're trying to get people to see that the joy that's referring to is this cosmic salvific plan that God had for humanity to be restored to him and that Jesus willingly entered into that contract. And so you're trying to get us to kind of do the work with God to figure out what our particular role in that venture might be.
I think it's certainly that. I mean, the divine had access to all of the things that were coming. He had omnipotence and omniscience to be able to do that. But I think it could be simply put that the joy before him was for him to hear his father say to him once again, well done, son. Well done. I gave you a task. It was perhaps too much, but you were obedient and you did it. You stayed obedient to the point of death. And I think he anticipated that joy of seeing the Father again and saying, way to go, way to go.
So that sounds to me like you're talking about faithfulness. The thing that we most want is to have God say that about us, that we'll be so relationally connected to God that he would say something similar about us. So it's a relational connectivity to God. Because when I hear, what do you most want? I think most people say, well, you just look inside your heart and then whatever you desire, that's what God wants to give you. And you can actually do that exercise and not have any God whatsoever. In fact, most of the world probably does, right? It's a little eat, pray. It's a little eat, pray, lovey, right? Just look inside your heart.
So you're
redefining joy and what you want in interesting ways that
I'm just agreeing with the joy that how Jesus defined it. I mean, I think his joy was to do the will of the Father. And he did it with the reason. And now we are left with that same charge to do the will of the Father. But we have the example of Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit residing in us to be able to resource us so that we can, because we can't do that on our own, and we'll never do it perfectly.
Sure.
It was never intended that God never thought we would do it perfectly. That's why he did such an overarching payment for sin. Otherwise, he would have just done payment for past sin.
Yeah.
But he's done also for future sin, because he knew it would never be done perfectly.
So as someone enters into that exercise and says, okay, I want to be connected to God. I want him to say about me, well done, my good and faithful servant. I want to be faithful to God. Obviously, that's going to look a little different for you as it does for me, because, I mean, it's going to be obviously a lot of overlap, right? But there's also some differentiations, because I have different skill sets. I'm a different person than you, a different path.
Absolutely.
So
it will have some commonalities.
Sure.
It will have, first, a faithfulness to your faith.
Right.
Right. It'll have a commitment to family. It'll have an expression of your giftedness. And it'll have an omniscience of joy.
I love that.
I want to be faithful. I want to see my family enjoy the benefits of God's blessing as well. I want to honor the gifts that God's deposited to me, so that he can say,
I expanded the kingdom with who I was.
Well.
Yep. Yep.
And then as people get to know me, they would have this sense of this dude has joy. I mean, I'm not burdened down with the expectation of certain outcomes that are going to give me worth. I'm actually leaving the outcomes to the Father, and just trying to remain faithful. So there are some commonalities.
I love that.
If you really think about it, you'll want.
Yeah.
But
I also love that your joy can't be stolen either, because your joy is not based on things that are here.
Right.
So that's also a helpful corrective.
Even Jesus' sorrow, Hebrews 12 says, the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. He knew he was going into a crummy situation.
Sure, absolutely. Oh, man. Well, there's so much here.
So much.
Yeah, and I think it kind of sets us up for Good Friday. This felt kind of Good Friday-y to me.
I agree.
On the garden is, it feels very, and I think that I don't think I've ever heard a bad Good Friday message, simply because it's just so much reflection on Jesus and his sacrifice, what it means, what it cost him, what it means for us. It always inevitably results in incredible gratitude, almost like a forced to your knees humility and gratitude. And that's what I'm most...
Or as Hebrews 5 says, a reverent submission.
Ooh, yeah.
A reverent submission of your life to the Father. Man, by his grace, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I sure don't do it as well as I should be doing it by now. I've been a Christian now 50 years. 50 years this summer.
Wow. Happy silver anniversary with you and Jesus.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I should, it should be deeper in me by now, it seems, but we'll keep working on it.
Man, well, thanks so much for sharing this. I can't wait till the next time you preach so we can get back on the afterward. And I know you're not going to go quietly into retirement. I still feel like you can throw 106 miles an hour. And I know maybe you can't pitch every four games. Maybe it's five now, but I tell you what, all of us appreciate when you throw as fast and hard as you do. So thanks for that. And I look forward to the next time we get to hang out.
Thanks, Dad. Love you, buddy.
All right. Well, love you too, Steve. Talk to you soon.
See ya.
All right. Just want to say thanks again to Steve Clifford for stopping by. Join us next week when David Kim and I, the two Davids, David Squared, the two best Davids on staff, if I do say so myself, we'll be talking about the betrayal of Peter as we march toward Easter. Okay, we'll see you next week.